Tonight is June 15th, Tuesday night at Shari Kila. We're learning Mishnah, and we will now review and continue with Mishnah 6 from last week, and then go on to Mishnah 7. And those two Mishnayot are very strongly connected. So looking at Mishnah 6, that is on the sheet of Mishnah that everyone has, 260 and 261. It's on the right-hand side at the bottom of the Mishnah text, which is at the top, Mishnah Vav. And it says, Misachakin, actually it's the opposite, it's Misachakin, kind of hard to pronounce, Misachakin Bansarim, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir Oser, Natan Alea Neser, Shehu Rahav Arbaat Fahim, Kishera, Uvilvad Shelo Yishan Tahtav. What it means is, misakachin, from the language of schach, right? We do the verb of schaching, bansarim, with boards. We said that these boards are not in their natural state. They have been, to a certain degree, made rectangular, and they've been processed, but they have not fully become kelim. They're not yet in the state in which human beings use them as a final product. They're not a roof. They're just boards. They're not kelim. They're certainly not kelim. I'll actually go back a little bit and say that they are and they aren't kelim. What they're called in halachic language is pshutei klei etz, which means simple wooden kelim. Pshutei klei etz. And the rule is that although usually kelim are mikabel tuma, right? They're mikablei tuma. In the case of pshutei klei etz, wooden utensils that are pashut, that are simple, meaning they don't have a beit kibul, they don't have a, how do you say beit kibul in English, they don't have a receptacle to hold something, like a, therefore they're still not in the final stage of completion yet, and they're not susceptible to tumah, although we call them kelim, they're not full kelim. When does a something that's in the category of pshutei clay etz become a full clay that it's susceptible to tumah? When you hollow out part of it so that it has a beit kibul, it has a receptacle, or you actually build it into something that is in the final stage of what human beings use, like a roof, or like a trunk, right, or like a room.
So if there's a stick of wood that's partially processed so that you can use it to stir food.
You know what? I don't know. I think the answer is there's not yet mikabel tumah. I don't know.
It's not hollow. It's not. How
you can still. No, he didn't say that. So I don't know the answer to that question. But anyway, Nisarim certainly are not Mikablei Tuma, as we said last week. So you're allowed to schach with Nisarim. That is Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, whereas Rabbi Meir Oser, he says you cannot. You cannot do that. And we asked ourselves last week a little bit why. Why would Rabbi Meir say no? And there's something called Zerat Tikra, the decree of a roof. It looks like a roof. It looks like a roof over your sukkah. And certainly you're not allowed to have a roof. We all understand that if this building's roof was made of materials that you can make schach of, it still wouldn't be good. Why not? It follows all the conditions. Like, say, it's not, it grows from the ground, it's wood, and it is not made into a kli, and it is talush, it's disconnected from the ground. It could be perfect schach. But if it's a roof, it's not. Why? For the most simple reason that you have to be in a sukkah, not in the house. Like we said, a sukkah has to be a dira, but it has to be a rai. It has to be a building, but it has to be temporary. If you just live in your house, even if the roof falls under the technical definition of schach, if it's a roof, it's not schach. And in this case, even though it's not a roof, it looks like a roof. It's probably gzera d'rabbanan, a rabbinic decree, which connects us to the previous Mishnah, which also was about a rabbinic decree. So Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have such a gzerah, whereas Rabbi Meir does have such a gzerah. Then it says, the last word of the first line, Natan aleya neser, he put upon her which is sukkah. He put on the sukkah a neser in the singular, not in the plural. Shurachav arba tfachim, which is four tfachim wide, and as I said last time, or more. Kshera. Uvilvad shelo yishan tachtav, under the condition that he won't sleep underneath it or do anything else that you're supposed to do in the sukkah underneath it. This is kind of paradoxical, because first it says kshera, but you can't sukkah underneath it. So what do you mean kshera? So we said last time that it means that this one neser doesn't disqualify the whole sukkah, but the neser itself is disqualified, and you cannot sleep under it, and under it is not a kosher sukkah. So that we discussed last time. And then last time we went further and asked the very important question that is divided into two questions. The first part of it is, if the second part of the Mishnah says we're talking about a neser that is four tfachim or more wide, well, was the first part talking about neserim that are four or more or less than four? That's one question. And the second question is the second part of the Mishnah only Aliba the Rebbe Meir? Is it only according to Rebbe Meir, who in the first part says disqualified, asur? And that would be why it says in the second part, Shalei Shan Tachtav. Or is the second part Aliba de Kulam, according to all? Even according to Rabbi Yehuda. So these are two questions. Is the first part of the Mishnah talk for the same Nesarim as the second part or not? Mm-hmm. And the second question, is the second part talking according to both the opinions in the first or only according to Rabbi Meir? Two questions. And we said last week, and around here we ended, that those two questions are connected. The answers to them are intertwined. Because if you say that the first part of the Mishnah is talking about the same neser as in the second part, that is to say, if you say that the first part is talking about neserim that are four or more, then it can't be that the second part is going according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. It must only be Rabbi Meir. Why? Because if the first part is talking about neserim four or more, and Rabbi Yehuda says there's no problem with the sukkah that's all neserim on top, then why would the second part say there's a problem with sleeping under sukkah that has only one neser on top? So that means that means the following, that if you say that the first part is talking about the same neserim as the second part, assume that are four or more, then you have no choice but to say that the second part is only following Rabbi Meir and not Rabbi Yehuda. You have no choice but to say that, and that's uncomfortable, but it's not the end of the world. It's uncomfortable to say, it's less likely to say, that the second part is only Rabbi Meir, not Rabbi Yehuda, because there's no indication of that. And since that's not impossible, but uncomfortable, therefore, we're led to the more likely possibility, the other possibility, which is that the first part of the Mishnah is talking neserim that are different than the second part, neserim that are smaller, neserim that are less than four. And then and only then does Rabbi Yehuda say no problem with smaller neserim. He says with smaller neserim it doesn't look like a roof, just sticks on top. So therefore, he says no gzeirat tikra, there's no rabbinic decree that it looks like a roof. Rabbi Meir says, even in such a case of small neserim, it looks like a roof, and there's a decree. The second part of the Mishnah is talking about different neserim, larger neserim. That's why it says in the second part, Shehu Rachav Arba Tfachim, that it's wide four. So it's different case than the first part of the Mishnah. It's a different case where it's a wider neser. Here, even Rabbi Yehuda, who in the first part said there's no problem, now when it's a bigger neserim, even he agrees that it's bad, that there's a gzeirat tikra, that there's a rabbinic decree that it looks like a tikra, and therefore he agrees with Rabbi Meir that under this neser, this big neser, four or more, you can't do any sukkah stuff. You can't sleep. And that seems to be the simple way.
And it's also about Rabbi Meir?
And all the more so. what Rabbi Meir said, you can't sleep under it.
But I'm saying it doesn't work quite. No. Because
why?
Because Rabbi Meir said it's invalid, even small ones. A big one, how can it be okay?
Right.
How could it be shera, kosher?
Valid. Yeah.
The answer is, because in the first part, it's nisarim in the plural. Your whole sukkah was covered with them. The second one is only one. So with only one,
if he had a small, one small board, what's that? I mean, it doesn't fit with Rabbi Meir.
No, the second part, mm-hmm. it says it's four or more.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Why?
What do you mean
just
why?
Just talked about why Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir has said even small boards
have a decree.
No good.
No good. No good. Right.
So large
board. One large board is okay.
One large board is okay for what purpose? That it doesn't passle the whole sukkah.
Yes.
So you can't sleep underneath it.
Talking about Rabbi Meir. Why does it say one large board is okay?
Because if it's only one large board...
I'm saying one large board. Why does it say one large board is okay?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Why doesn't he say one board is okay?
Because it wants to say a halakha that's true even according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Well, I think also the issue here...
What is it? I never want to leave a case in which Dave and I don't agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I think part of it is you can have a lot of small boards that you try to make the entire schach and try to cover the whole thing with that. But with one, as long as you have only one board, even if it's larger, but it's a relatively small section of mm-hmm. it, and the rest of the schach is kosher, then you don't necessarily... So the second case is not necessarily the case that Rabbi Meir has said is asur, because it's not really covering the whole thing. It's just covering a little piece of it.
But my question is... I understand. I agree with what you just said. Okay? But my question is, if I'm only talking about Rabbi Meir, it should have said...
No, I'm not only talking about Rabbi Meir. I'm talking about both opinions. That's the whole point. That the second part of the Mishnah is talking about both opinions. They both agree that even though they had a machloket with small boards, when you get to large boards, in the singular, that one large board, even though it's large, if it's only one, it doesn't ruin the whole sukkah, but the board in of itself is not kosher schach. That both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda agree in there, for you can't sleep underneath it. If it was a smaller board, then Rabbi Yehuda would say you could sleep underneath it. Right? Rabbi Yehuda would even say if it's a sukkah filled with small boards, that it's kosher. It does make sense.
Sounds like they have different roofing experience in terms of what you can make a roof out of.
If it's just the size of the issue, then David, I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying. I mean, because how would going up in size, change Rabbi Meir's opinion.
It doesn't.
I'm saying it does.
It doesn't say for Rabbi Meir, it doesn't tell us what his view is if there's one small board.
You're right. It doesn't.
It doesn't answer that. That's what I'm getting at.
It doesn't.
It seems that this one board in this case that there's some way that one heavy board could hold down the skok and be used as... This is the way I see it.
Hold down?
Yeah. As though, okay, if you have a bunch of straw and things, and then you laid one heavy board to secure it, then you can see that that's different. Then in this case, it's not using them as skok, but it's having one heavy board.
No, but it is using it as skok. It says.
Well, I understand. It's on the roof. It's real perfect. I would think there would be some utility in its weight.
Okay, but that's irrelevant. Why, if it's holding out or not holding out?
No, it's not irrelevant. I mean, if Rabbi Meir understands that there is usefulness in putting a board on top to in order to secure the skok, then he might then give in and say, okay, it's okay to put one, just don't sleep under that part.
Okay.
I think it's very important.
Okay.
I quite frankly, I find the issue of one board that's 4 clay wide, at least makes that portion of the sukkah not kosher.
Right.
So it begs the question, what is it up there for in the first place? In other words, why don't you take that
that's
board
what I was
and
answering.
Throw it out?
Right, I understand. That's what you're answering. But I don't think that's an issue, because it's just treating a situation to teach us a halakha.
Yeah, but now if you take that, since Rabbi, let's say Rabbi Meir walks into a sukkah, and there is one board that's more than 4 fists wide,
mm-hmm.
and he says, aha, this part over here is not kosher, this is kosher, I'm going to sit over there.
Mm-hmm.
But then couldn't he say to a bunch of kids, hey, take that Nesser down, which then makes the whole sukkah kosher. Is that
no,
correct?
Because maybe you don't have enough scotch then.
Well, yeah. So is that going to be discussed anywhere? Hametz schach. In other words,
wait till next Mishnah. Exactly. Wait till next Mishnah.
Okay, sorry.
I think I missed something though. How do we interpret that what Rabbi Yehuda said, meaning it to be solid boards rather than boards spaced apart, small boards spaced apart?
Well, it says in the first two words, Misakachin ben Sarim. You do your schach of Nesarim in the plural. You made your schach of Nesarim. Mm-hmm. That's the situation, that you have a sukkah and you cover the top of it. You use a schach Nesarim. There's nothing else there but Nesarim.
Okay, but it means...
It doesn't mean that it's solid.
It doesn't mean it's solid. I mean, it can be like one by a spaced apart.
Yeah.
It just says it meets all the requirements. There's enough covered to meet the requirement, doesn't say if it's solid or not.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Certainly, there are individual boards with. They're not. It's not just one big board. They're all. They're less than three. We said.
Right.
Less than 4 tefachim. Excuse me.
Right.
So now.
Okay.
So now that's just an introduction to the Gemara on this Mishnah. And as usual, we're going to see only those parts of the Gemara that are directly relevant to the Pshat of the Mishnah. So we're looking at the sheet that we prepared for Mishnah 6. And the Gemara is on the back of the sheet, where it says at the top, D, additional sources for Mishnah 6. And we'll begin with Rashi on the Gemara. I'm doing the order that I brought the sources. And this is the Rashi says as follows. This is Rashi's commentary on the Gemara, and here is commenting on the Mishnah as it appears in the Gemara. So Rashi says, Rabbi Meir, right, that's our Rabbi Meir in the first part of the Mishnah. He says, De pesil itle gzirat tikra. That a psul he has of gzirat tikra. Rabbi Meir holds this matter of Gzeirat Tikra, decree that it looks like a roof, and that makes the sukkah pasul. And then Rashi goes on to say, Imaksherit Vahu, if we would kosher through it, in other words, if we would allow Nesarim to be kosher, Ati Lameimar, one would come, Ati means come, Meimar means to say, one would come to say, Mali, Lisakech be'elu mali leshev tachat korot beiti. What to me to make schach of these? What to me to sit under the beams of my roof? In other words, what difference does it make if I sit under these or under the beams of my roof? If we allow someone to make schach of Nesarim, he will say, well, there's no difference if it's sukkah in my house, and I might as well sit in my house because that also has a roof just of Nesarim, just like the sukkah. So it's a gzerah that people will remember the difference between a sukkah and a home. Technically, such a sukkah of this nisarim is kasher midoraita, but Rabbanan said, stay away from it. It could cause confusion. And Rashi goes on to say, afhi b'nisarim mikura, even he, meaning my house, is with boards roofed. Mikora, it's roofed as a verb. That's not a verb, it's a part of speech. Call a house roofed? It's an adjective.
It's an adjective.
Adjective. Yeah. Adjective that's made from a verb, right? Called a gerund?
Exactly.
Anyway.
They lived on houses that...
They lived in houses that their walls, ceilings were made of boards that you can see? More or less. We'll talk about that later. So he says, V'hahu v'day pasul, and that certainly is pasul. Your house is certainly pasul for sukkah. And now Rashi makes his own drasha. I think this is Rashi's drasha. The sukkah amar rachmana v'lo beito shel kol yemot hashana. That sukkah said the Torah, and not his house of all the days of the year. Right, right. When the Torah said sukkah, it meant not your house. So certainly, even if the roof of the house fulfills the technical requirements of schach, it's no good because it's a house, it's not a sukkah. And therefore, anything that looks similar to that is also no good because you might get confused. Okay, that's pretty clear. Pretty clear. And now the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar Rav. Now, don't jump to conclusions here. Let's read out the Gemara before you get upset, okay? Amar Rav. Rav is a first-generation Babylonian Amora. Means he lives in about the year 200. The first generation after the close of the Mishnah canon. And he says, concerning our Mishnah, Machloket bin Sarin sheyesh behen arba'a. He says the Machloket is concerning the Sarim that have four or more. De Rabbi Meir, it leg zeirat tikra. The Rabbi Yehuda, let leg zeirat tikra. That Rabbi Meir holds it leg, he has zeirat tikra. And Rabbi Yehuda, let leg, doesn't have, ain lo zeirat tikra. Aval bin Sarim she'ein bahu arba'a divrei hakol k'shera. But concerning the Sarim that don't have in them, that there isn't in them arba, they're smaller, divrei hakol, the words of all, k'shera.
Both of them.
Right, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. That's what Rav says, and that is not what I explained. Right, that's not what I explained. Because according to what Rav says, the first part of the Mishnah, where there's a machlok, there's talking the stream that are four or more. Which means that according to Rav, as the Gemara will say, the second part of the Mishnah is not a liba de all. It's not according to all opinions, but only according to Rabbi Meir. But not according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rav's opinion. And I didn't explain that early because I think it's less likely. Now Shmuel's opinion. Shmuel lived at the same time as Rav. First generation Amora of Bavel, and he says different. Shmuel Amar, and Shmuel says, Bishain behen arba'a machloket. In that there isn't in them arba'a is the machloket. The first part of the Mishnah is Nesirim that are not arba, but rather less. Aval yesh behen arba'a divrei hakol psula. But when there is in them arba'a, the words of all, psula. So according to Shmuel, the first part of the Mishnah is talking about less than arba. The second part is talking about more than arba, and that's why we can say the second part is divrei hakol, is all of the opinions, and that is more comfortable to say. Why does Rav say what he says? Well, it's a whole big story which we won't get into. So now, with that machloket, again, I suggest to remember Shmuel more than Rav. That's the halacha, by the way. Let's read the next section of Gemara. Ein behen arba'a v'afilu pachot mishlosha hakanim ba'almaninu, says the Gemara. And this Gemara is now questioning, it has a problem with Shmuel. Because you told me that according to Shmuel, there's a machloket in less than arba. Right? There's a machloket, which means that Rabbi Meir is going to say there's a gzerat tikra, even if it's less than arba. Is that logical, that a nes is so small? Rabbi Meir claims it looks like a tikra? And the Gemara says, ein behen arba. If you're talking about ein ben arba, there isn't a ben arba, then that logically includes a filu pachot mishlosha, even less than three. That's really small. Ha kanim ba'almaninu, behold, sticks merely they are. Kanim is sticks. Ba'alma is merely. How do you do it in English? You know? Merely? Must be a better word. Nin, who they are. So what are you telling me? How can you tell me? This opinion of Shmuel, it says the machloket even less than arva, does that mean that Rabbi Meir holds that, that even less than shalosh, and less than two, and less than one, is a gzera tikwa, ain't the davar sof, never come to an end. You'll tell me you can't make schach of even very, very, very thin branches. So what can I make schach of? It's crazy. So the answer is, Amara Papa, who's a later Amora, Hachi ka'amar, thusly it says, thusly it means, yesh behen arba divrei akol psula, pachot mishlosha divrei akol kshera. If they have more than arba, everyone agrees that it's psul. Right? That's the second part of the Mishnah. If they have less than shalosh, they all agree it's kasher. My tama, kanim ba'almaninu, what's the reason? Sticks merely they are. Ki pligi mishlosha ad arba'a. When they argue, from three until four.
How they can say that it's stick if it's two of this? This is not stick. This is much more than stick. Well, like this, like this.
The question is, where do you draw the line? We're just looking for a way to draw the line. So in the end, we draw the line. We say less than three. No one's making a big fuss about that. Four or more, everyone agrees it's no good. In the middle there, that's where the machloket is. In the middle, that's where the machloket is. Between three and four. Okay?
So this is saying that, in the Mishnah, the part where it says Rav Meir invalidates them, it's talking about the next statement, not the previous.
No, it's about the previous statement.
But it's saying, but then how can it say that they agree?
They agree that less than three is good, and four more is bad. But the machloket in the first part of the Mishnah is between three and four. Like, let me actually just put it on the board.
So I think he's saying that the Mishnah isn't even talking about things less than three because everybody knows.
Everybody agrees on that.
And so it's starting, they don't mention those.
Right.
So it's starting at, what about these small boards, meaning between three and four?
Mm-hmm. Right. Less than
that's
three,
where they start.
No one is talking, and four or more is the second part of the Mishnah. Right? And between three and four is the first part of the Mishnah.
According to Shmuel, right? This is according to Shmuel. And then the Gemara says, Tanan, which means quote from Mishnah. And we're quoting the second half of the Mishnah now. Natan alein neser shehu rachav arba'at tfachim shera uvilvad shelo yishan taktav. That's a quote from the second part of the Mishnah. If he put on it a neser that is rachav, that it's wide, four or more, it's kosher, under condition you don't sleep underneath it. That's it's not kosher, but it doesn't pass with the sukkah. Just quoting the second part of the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. And now the Gemara is going to try and figure out the relationship between this second part and the first part of the Mishnah. And of course, it'll depend on if you hold like Rav Shmuel, as we said earlier. Bishlama, it fits well. Lishmuel, according to Shmuel, Da'amar, who said, V'she'ein behen arba'a machloket, that if there isn't in them arba, that's where the machloket is in the first part. Aval yesh ben arba, but if there is four, divrei akol psula, or hold that it's pasul. Mishum hachi, because of thus, lo yishan taktav, don't sleep under it. That's what we're saying is, if you hold like Shmuel, then the first and second part of the Mishnayot fit together. And there's no tension between the first and second part. The first part is talking about less than four, and there's a machloket. The second is talking about four or more, and there's no machloket. It's good. fits well. Ela l'rav, back to the Gemara, in the last five words of the line, ela l'rav, but according to Rav, damar b'sheyesh ben arba machloket, who said that in the first part of the Mishnah, there is four, and it's a machloket. Avel ein ben arba divrei akol k'shera, but if it was less than arba, all would agree it's kasher. The Rabbi Yehuda, amai lo yishan tachtav. According to Rabbi Yehuda, why shouldn't he sleep underneath it? If Rabbi Yehuda holds that if there's a machloket, then four or more, and Rabbi Yehuda says there's no problem in the first part of the Mishnah, why in the second part of the Mishnah does it say don't sleep underneath it? And the answer is, mi savrat divrei akol hi, who says it's the words of all, the second part of the Mishnah? Seifa etanan l'Rabbi Meir. The Seifa, the end, is learned according to Rabbi Meir. The second part is only Rabbi Meir, which you could say, but it's uncomfortable. So at this point, it looks like Rav's position is a bit embattled, where Shmuel's position is good. One more section of Gemara on Mishnah 6 before we get to Mishnah 7. Tanya kavatei de Shmuel, tanya kavatei de Rav, which means a braita is learned. The word tanya means a braita is learned. Kavatei means in accordance with Shmuel. Tanya kavatei de Rav, and a braita is learned in accordance with Rav. Uh-oh. Horror story. Now, there's the two opinions, Rav and Shmuel. They both have a leg to stand on from earlier Tannaitic sources.
So Tanya is
the Tanya is the same period as the Mishnah. Right? It's the time of the Tanaim. So now we're going to bring the Braita that supports Shmuel and the Braita that supports Rav, and we'll be left with no way to decide. And it says as follows, Sakkacha, this is a braita, Sakkacha, bansarim, shel erez, she'en behen arba'a. He made schach of nisarim, of erez, erez is cedar, she'en behen arba, that don't have arba, divrei kol k'shera, all agree it's kosher. Yesh behen arba, but if they do have arba, Rabbi Meir posel the Rabbi Yehuda makshir. Whose opinion is that? Rav Shmuel?
No, actually,
Rav Shmuel.
Sorry?
Say Rav or say Shmuel?
Rav.
Correct. That's Rav. Mm-hmm. He says that less than four, everyone agrees. There's no gzeira. It's good. The machloket is when there's four or more. That's Rav. Right. That's not Shmuel. Right. And then the Braita goes on and says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Ma'asei b'shata sakana, a tale of the hour of danger. In other words, there's a Roman decree that you couldn't sit in the sukkah. Shehivianu nesarim. That we brought Nisarim, Shahayu behen arba, that had four, v'sikachnu al gebei mirpeset, we made schach on the porch, v'yashavnu tachtehen, and we sat underneath it. In other words, we made a sukkah that looks like our house, so the Romans wouldn't know that it's a sukkah. And that shows to you that you're allowed to make a sukkah that has boards of four or more. So that proves to you two things. It proves to us that indeed there's a machloket when it's four or more, which is Rav's position, and it proves that Rav Yehuda is right, that there's no gzeirah even when you have boards that are that big. Amrulo misam ra'aya, ein shata sakana ra'aya. They said to him, from there is a proof. The time of danger is not a proof. In other words, we'll tell you that Rabbi Meir is right. There's a gzerat tikra, and if you have boards four or more, you can't use them. But since it was a time of pikuach nefesh, you can do whatever you want. So that bright, that's a bright. It proves that Rav was correct in his understanding of the Mishnah. That in less than Arba, there's no gzera at all, and more than Arba, there's a machloket. Which means the second part of the Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Meir and not according to Rabbi Yehuda. So that has a leg to stand on, has a braita. But we also have an opposing braita. Ready for the opposing braita? Give you 10 seconds to digest. It's the last three lines of the third line. Tanya kavate de Shmuel. We learned in a braita in accordance with Shmuel. Sakkecha bin sarim shel erez sheyesh ben arba'a divrei kol psula, which is the opposite of the first braita. If you made tzrach of nisarim of cedar that have arba or more, divrei kol psula, everyone holds that it's pasul. Just the opposite of the first braita. Ein bam arba, if they don't have arba, Rabbi Meir posel, Rabbi Yehuda machshir, Rabbi Yehuda says no good, Rabbi Yehuda says kosher. Right? So that's according to Shmuel, that the machloket is when they don't have arba. Which would mean, of course, that if they do have arba, it could be that everyone agrees that it's no good. You can't sleep underneath it. And now the next line of the Braita, which is going to be important for the next Mishnah. So again, this is the Braita according to Shmuel. This is the way the halacha goes. Omodeh Rabbi Meir, and acknowledges and agrees and gives in Rabbi Meir. And he's the one that says there is a gzerah. There's a gzerah for less than arba, and all the more so for more than arba. And Mode Rabbi Meir, Shim Yesh Bein Neser Len Neser, Kamalei Neser, if there is between Neser and Neser, like the space of a Neser, Shemaniya Psal Beinehem, that he puts Psal, which means Shach, it means he puts agricultural refuge, that's not the word, how do you say agricultural garbage? Refuge.
Refuse.
If he puts agricultural refuse Beinehem between them, Ksheira. So even though Rabbi Meir holds that all boards, well actually, according to them, are more than three, but boards, whether they're less than four or more than four, are not kosher, but if you have space between the boards is equal to the boards, and you put in that space kosher schach, then kshera. Of course, that fits with the second part of the Mishnah that says that if you have one board and the rest is kosher schach, it's okay. Although, in the Mishnah says, as long as you don't sleep under that one board.
Mm-hmm. So this is going to be kind of tough.
Fitting in.
Yeah.
Sleep standing up and just right to make sure that...
Right. Unless you say that Rabbi Meir in the Bright is talking about a board of less than four.
Less than, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Mishnah it's a board more than four.
Yeah.
So Rabbi Meir would be saying a board of less than four, he agrees there's a gzerah, but that's only when it's nesarim in the plural, it's filled with nesarim. If you have space between them, at least 50% filled with kosher schach, then it seems like he's saying the whole sukkah's kshira. And the obvious question here is going to be, is it 50% or 51%? He seems to say 50%, but you'd say logically, what's 50% worth? It should be 50% point one.
Well, but is the issue here that if your space between is equal to the space of, and you have kosher schach in between, then it doesn't look like a woof.
Ah, I see. Mm-hmm. Ah.
So it's not important whether it's 50 or 51%.
I see. Uh-huh.
It's just that
okay.
Make a roof.
Very good point.
That much gap between.
I see. Okay.
The
right. were we talking Doraita of Tzach that's Pesul, then it would have to be 51% kosher. But since it's not Doraita, it's only Gzera, as long as you do it like this, it doesn't look like a roof. Okay. 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 And in the last part of the bright, again, this is Liba de Shmuel, according to Shmuel, Omo de Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is the one that says there's no Gzera, even if the boards are less than four. Shim natan aleya nesa shu rachav arba'a. Now if you put a nesa that is rachav arba'a, tfachim kshira, ve'en yeshenim tachtav. But you can't sleep underneath it, ve'yeshen tachtav lo yatsayidei chovatom. If you sleep underneath it, it doesn't fulfill your obligation. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda, he doesn't have a decree for a board less than four, but he does have a decree for a board more than four or more. So in the end, we simply see that there is a machloket tanaim, a machloket among braitot, how to understand our Mishnah. Okay. Ready? Ready to go on? Next Mishnah. Next Mishnah. So we put this aside a little bit. And we go to Mishnah Zion, the seventh Mishnah. And we don't need clocks because we're illustrating how late it is.
Our internal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'll try and wake you up. Tikra, the top of page 261 in the printing of the Mishnah we have. Mishnah Zion. Tikra she'en aleya ma'aziva. Rabbi Yehuda omer, Beit Shammai umrim mipak peik v'notel echat mibin taim. Uveit Hillel umrim mipak peik o notel echat mibin taim. V'Rabbi Meir omer, notel echat mibin taim ve'eno mipak peik. Back to the beginning of the Mishnah. Tikra, a roof. So this is not a sukkah that you're discussing, can I use boards for the sukkah? You made a roof. This in your house. A roof she'en aleya ma'aziva. A roof that there isn't upon it plaster. In other words, you're in the process of building your house and you didn't finish. You put the boards on top for the roof, but you didn't plaster them over. And I guess we're talking about the inner plaster that you'd see from above, from inside the house. Or perhaps we're talking about the outer plaster, I don't know. Perhaps they used to put plaster on both sides and there's no plaster. So it's a half-finished roof. There's boards and there's no plaster. Concerning this case of a half-finished roof, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Beit Shammai Omrim, that Beit Shammai says, Mifak Peik. Mifak Peik means shake up the boards. Shake them up. And put them back where you took them from. Vinote lechat mi bentayim. And remove one from among. Remove one from among. I'm not going to explain what that means. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, Beit Shammai held that you have to do two things to make your half-finished roof kosher for tzach. You have to pick it up and put it down, and you have to take one from among, whatever that means. You have to do both these things. Again, the condition is there's no plaster. Beit Hillel umrim, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, Beit Hillel used to say, Mifak peik o, notel lechat mi bintayim. That what you have to do is not mifak peik and take, you have to mifak peik or take one from among. Rabbi Meir omer, but Rabbi Meir says, notel lechat mi bintayim ve'eno mifak peik. Take one from among, and don't mifakpeik. Mifakpeik is not relevant. Yeah. You have to take one from among, whatever that means. So again, to say it, again, Rabbi Yehud and Rabbi Meir live after the time of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. but they have a machloket in which Rabbi Yehuda says, I remember that Beit Shammai and Betel argued over this, and Rabbi Meir says, no, I don't remember a machloket of Beit Shammai and Hillel over this. I'll just tell you what the halakha is. And Beit Shammai and Betel didn't disagree. Rabbi Yehuda says, Beit Shammai used to say, you can do this, you have to do this and that. Mm-hmm. Whereas Beit Hillel, it said, do this or that. And Rabbi Meir says, no, there's no machloket at all. I know the halakha is, you have to do this, and the other is irrelevant. I thought of 15 questions on this Mishnah.
At least.
So,
yeah.
Here we go. In light of the previous Mishnah, what material might the roof be made of? Or to ask the same thing a bit differently, when the Mishnah used the word ahat, it says take one from among, what is it apparently referring to? Neser. In context, it looks like the answer is Neser. The roof is made of boards, and it's talking about that roof that's almost finished but not quite. So it's a continuation of the previous Mishnah. And indeed, when it says take one from it, doesn't say what one is. You have to go back to the context, the previous Mishnah. That seems to be the way we should read it.
But
what are you discovering?
But this seems to be... this just seems inconsistent.
Ah, that's my next question. Right? What apparent contradiction, or at least tension, does there appear to be between this Mishnah and the previous one? If we say they're both talking about Nisarim, then the obvious question is going to be, our Mishnah Zion, what size Nisarim? Mm-hmm. And let's assume Shmuel's interpretation of the previous Mishnah. That's the halakha. So let's see. If we're talking Nisarim that are four or more, and we said in the previous Mishnah, if they're four or more, everyone agrees that the Neser itself is not kosher. If you have one, okay, so you can have good tzchach and you can sleep on this side or that side. If you have all of them that are not kosher, obviously it's no good. So if that's the case in the previous Mishnah, that Nesarim are four or more, just not kosher, then this Mishnah, it can't be talking about Nesarim that are four or more, because it has you leaving the Nesarim in place. Right. At least according to some opinions, right? Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yehuda says,
right.
That Beit Hillel says, that you can mipakpek, or that mipakpek is good. Mipakpek is good. If it was Nesarim of four or more, it would mean you'd be leaving all those Nesarim in place. That certainly can't fit with the previous Mishnah. So therefore, our Mishnah Zion has to be small Nisarim.
Yeah, less than three. Even less than
three. Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even think of that. That's too easy, though, for the Gemara. No, that can't be, because the Gemara said that less than three are not even called Nisarim. They're called Kanim Ba'alma, mere sticks.
Mm-hmm. Right, but you have a problem. You built it for... it's addressing the building problem. They built for the
simple
problem.
Oh, I hear. You know what? I guess you could be right. But it's too simple.
I take it all back.
I must admit, I labored over that I didn't even think of that possibility. Mm-hmm. But the Gemara did call them Kanim Ba'alma, mere sticks, as if to say no one would build a house. Right, if they're mere sticks, it was that no one would build a house with them. Right, that's what it was no one would confuse them for a roof. The assumption must be no one would make a house of them. So
have you ever seen an old-fashioned, a true plaster wall? Not sheetrock.
Yeah, plaster.
Oh, and they put plaster
a real plaster wall. Thin little
boards. With gaps.
Okay.
That's how you plaster.
Okay, but not here.
It's just to give the plaster something to
hold on to.
So the plaster forms.
Right. Okay. I hear.
But they're... In the prior Mishnah, where it says no one would talk about it, is because nobody would even consider this to be a roof.
Right, that's
clearly
what I was saying.
Clearly we have this considered to be a roof. Yeah. So, by implication, it's not in the category that we wouldn't even call it a roof. So does that mean that this is between 3 and 4?
That's what I would say, this is between 3 and 4.
But can I just note, I understand how it could be that.
Yeah.
But we might note that I always think it's not addressing that same problem.
Yeah.
It's addressing the problem of, did you build it to be a sukkah?
Mm-hmm. That's what
right.
So whether it looks like a roof or not, it was a roof.
Right.
You built it as
okay,
your roof.
That's a good point.
That's a good point. And we have, to do something to undo.
We haven't finished it yet.
But you get an issue of Kavanah. And just as we learned before that if you put bundles down, it wasn't enough to just untie them. You had to pick them up or do something to them.
Right. I admit,
So this could be an issue of Kavanah. It's not complete. I'm going to use it for my sukkah, but I got to do something.
Like remove one of the...
Like I remove a piece or
just
yeah, I admit it that I guess that makes sense, although again I didn't think of it. Mm-hmm. And let's try to think if it could be that this Mishnah is talking about Nisrim that are between 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. So what did we say about Nisrim between 3 and 4 in the previous Mishnah? We said that's a machloket. That's a machloket of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, in which Rabbi Meir says asur, and Rabbi Yehuda says mutar. So then I would say as follows. In this Mishnah, so let's look at Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is okay. If it's between 3 and 4, so Rabbi Yehuda says there's no gzerah in the previous Mishnah. And here he says, whether it's Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel, he agrees that it could be there's no gzerah, but this one is already made into a roof, but it's an almost roof. So therefore, Beit Shammai says that you have to take one away, and according to Beit Hillel, it's enough to leave them. But you have to be mikpakpek because of the problem of taseh velo minasui.
Right.
Right. So it makes sense. So Beit Hillel could be consistent this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah. Now what about Rabbi Meir? I'm sorry, Rabbi Yehuda could be consistent from the previous Mishnah and this Mishnah together. What about Rabbi Meir? Here I think we see a tension and a contradiction. Because Rabbi Meir said that in between 3 and 4 there's a clear gzerah. There's a clear gzerah. And it's not good if you have a roof filled up with Nisarim. In our Mishnah, when it's a roof filled up with Nisarim that was for the purpose of making a roof, why does Rabbi Meir say
that you just have to take one away and it's okay?
Right, how does taking one away help? If Rabbi Meir said in the previous Mishnah that it's absolutely a sur to be misakech b'Nisarim, because they're just not kosher, it's a gzeirav tikra, then how does taking one away help? Okay, perhaps it does, perhaps it doesn't.
Well, if you reread the earlier Mishnah to say it's covered with wooden planks with no spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
This leaves us
right. And remember now what the right had said about Rabbi Meir, that if you
right
take...
Right. In that case, if it's solid, you have to take it a lot more than one.
Ah, okay.
You have to take out like every other one.
And that's the real meaning of notel echad mibentayim.
Take
one from among. Didn't mean
like
take one away. It meant every other one.
Every other one.
Oh, that makes
sense. I left that to not to say it, so we felt the need
but
to say it.
But you've done something with Kavanah. You've done something with the intention of making it a sukkah.
Right, and both intention and no, it doesn't look like a roof anymore.
Right.
If it's every other, and of course when it says take away every other one, what it implies is in place of what you take away, put
tzach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it looks like our Mishnah could fit with the previous Mishnah if it's talking about, certainly if it's talking about less than three, but even if it's talking between 3 and 4, it could fit with the previous Mishnah. Right.
What would you explain that it's adding to the previous?
Oh, that's exactly what the Gemara asks.
Mm-hmm.
It fits so well, so what's it adding? Very good, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have to wait for the Gemara for that.
Okay.
So despite the fact that we seem now to be on pretty stable ground, except for the fact that the ground is too stable, that there's no chidush, there's no innovation here, I still want to bring up the issue of the third question. What grammatical issue would seem to militate? Ayla, militate means to disprove. I hope I used the word right.
Militate against.
Militate against means the most obvious contextual answer to question one. If we said the answer to question one is that Zion is talking about Nisarim, just like the previous one is Nisarim, but what grammatical issue would seem to say it's not Nisarim? I'll give you a hint. How do you say Nisarim in the plural?
Nisarim.
You don't say Nisarot.
No, that's right.
No.
Why?
And it says She'en Aleha.
That's Mazivah.
Talking about putting the plaster on.
No, that was on the Sukkah.
On the Sukkah.
Notel
Echat. No, that's about Zion.
Notel Echat is feminine.
Yeah.
It's feminine.
Feminine. You, it should have said Notel Echad if it was Neser. Yeah. Take away one. Why is it in the feminine? So the truth is, in the end, there's no answer to that question. It is Neserim, but we have a problem here.
But it's so many times.
Right, it's so many times.
It's not.
You're right.
Yeah.
So the Gemara assumes that it's Nesarim, and we've assumed that it's Nesarim. I just wanted to bring up the possibility
that it's not.
That it's not Nesarim, and that's the reason why it says Notel Echat. And if it's not Nesarim, then
you have a whole different question.
Then we have a whole different can of worms.
So what is going to be? A hat that you put on the roof and put the tir on it? So what it can be if it's a hat film?
Question is, what else would they have made the roof out of?
They would make the roof of korot. A korah is a word that means beam, but I think that beams are sometimes made with untreated wood, as opposed to nesarim that is treated wood. I was thinking to myself, again, I have no basis for this. The Gemara doesn't agree with this. I was thinking that korah is feminine. Mm-hmm. Neser is masculine. So here it could be that you made your roof of beams as opposed to boards, beams in the sense of just logs. Logs would be a better word. And logs, of course, don't look as much like a roof as Nesarim do. And then we can say our mission is a whole different can of worms. But again, I'm just leading you off on a... How would that help?
Would be the right gender if it were straw or sticks or some word like that?
It seems radim kash. That's all masculine. What I can think of as feminine is korot, which would be logs.
I was going to say it couldn't be one of those words like shana, could it? It could be either.
So the truth is, I didn't have time to look it up. I'm assuming nesrim is masculine. If there are cases which nesrim is feminine, I should have looked it up. I didn't.
There are a few words that are like that.
You're right. There are.
I didn't. But the word benatayim is masculine. Otherwise, it would be with a nun.
Oh, that's a good point, isn't it, Mayela?
Yeah, good point.
This can be between two masculine.
Oh, really? Right. No, my wife is right. There is no benatayim.
No, it's the same.
It's the same. There isn't. It's masculine and feminine. Okay. So anyway. Let's go back to the tried and true path that it is Nesarim. It is Nesarim. And I really should look up if Nesarim could be feminine. Question 5. And now it gets easier. What do you think is the purpose or the halachic rationale of Mipakpek? We've said already, Taseh Belo Menasui. To put it down for the purpose of Sat. It's nothing to do with Gzerat Tikra. This is Doraita. You have to do it with the Kavanah that it's for Sukkah.
Is it not just to take it up and put it down, but to make it more disorganized?
No. Just for that you put it there for the purpose of Sukkah. Okay. Next question. What is the, well, we answered already. What is the practical meaning of notel echad bintayim? It means take one away, each other one, not just one. Seven, what do you think, according to Beit Shammai, is the purpose or the halachic rationale of notel echad bintayim? According to Beit Shammai, you have to do both mipakpek and take away every other one.
Because Beit Shammai thinks that if it's less than three pachim...
Less than four.
Not kasher.
Right, because of Seirat Tikra. Because it looks like that Beit Shammai has you do two different things for two different problems. Mm-hmm. One is Taseh V'lo Menasui, and that's Mipakpek, and the other is Gzeirat Tikra.
But if you Mipakpek, what is Chok? If it's not good, so how it's strange if you...
Taseh V'lo Menasui. Now you're putting it there for the L'Shem Sukkah.
But if you said that this wife, it's not kasher...
That's Gzeirat Tikra, and that's solved by Notel Echad Mibintayim, remember? Beit Shammai requires both. One to deal with this issue and one to deal with that issue. You have a problem of...
But each one is big. If you take it out and put it back, what is help? But you also have to take out every other one.
No, but if it's over four, we
conclude it's not more than four.
Yes, yeah, less than four.
It's less than four.
We said it's between three and four.
Shammai said that it's kosher.
I think the seventh Mishnah talks about things that are less than four.
Yeah, we said that's what we're saying. It's between three and four.
Mm-hmm. We stipulated that. Possibly less.
Well, David said less than three. That would make it even easier. But even if it's between three and four, it could work very well.
It can't work if it's four.
Between three and four, not four or more. Four or more.
Till four.
Right. Till four. Right. Right. So we're on question eight. Question eight. When one does that which is intended by the phrase notel echad bintayim, what else does it appear that he must do together with that in order to make the sukkah acceptable? That's the put tzchach in between. Right. You take everyone away. You put tzchach in between. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which approach appears to be more stringent? Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai. That's easy. Shammai requires two things, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. What might be the rationale behind the approach of Beit Hillel? That Beit Hillel, according to Rabbi Yehuda, says you have to do this or that.
They said that the Nesarim by themselves is kosher. So you just have to take one out or just...
Why? What issue are you dealing with? Taseh v'lo menasui or gzeirat tikra? No, then mepakpek wouldn't help.
Right.
Right.
Oh. Yeah.
But if the problem is only taseh v'lo menasui and not gzeirat tikra, then it could be that either of the two solutions solves the problem. If you mitpakpek, so you're putting it down for the purpose of sukkah, so you solve the problem of taseh v'lo menasui. And it could be that if you take either one out, every other one out, that also solves the problem of taseh v'lo menasui. Because you're doing, not doing a positive action, you're doing a negative action, that also makes it into a sukkah. So it could be that what we have here is that according to Rabbi Yehuda's interpretation of Beit Hillel, the only problem is Taseh V'lo Menasui.
Meaning make it for the sake of the sukkah.
Yes.
But you removed it for the sake of the sukkah.
Yeah, I'm saying it's a negative action.
Right, okay.
But
right.
I guess we'd be saying that negative action works as well as a positive action.
Mm-hmm. It seems like we learned in Mishnah 1 that Beit Hillel doesn't have such a rule.
Good point. You weren't here when we talked that there are two different levels of Kavanah. Beit Hillel, David points out that in the first Mishnah, there's a machloki that you need kavanah or not. Beit Shammai says yes, Beit Hillel says no. There was kavanah l'shem. What's the proper wording for it? L'shem hachad, for the purpose of the holiday. You don't need that according to Beit Hillel. But even Beit Hillel agrees you need that it has to be for the purpose of sukkah. Not sukkah in the sense of mitzvah, sukkah in the sense of building something that's not your house.
Okay.
Yeah, you need kavanah for sukkah.
Could it be that, I think another possibility is that Beit Hillel is saying that in the process of mitzvah tek, that you are doing both. That you can do one or the other in order to do both. That by shaking them
to
up,
do what is both?
Both create gaps and to be putting them down again for the.
Are you creating gaps by? Well,
by picking them up and putting them down for with kavanah, you also pick them up and put them down in less
In less ordered fashion.
Yeah, so you can either pick them up and put them down, or you can take one out. And in both you're covering both bases.
Yeah, I could be. I'm a little bit skeptical, but I hear that. Could be. Okay. 11. What does Rabbi Meir have to say about this disagreement between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? It's kind of a trick question. It's very easy. And I'll give it away by saying, look that I put the word disagreement in quotation marks.
Oh, he said that there wasn't really that disagreement.
Right.
Yeah.
There is no machloket.
There is no machloket. He just says this is what you got to do.
Yeah. There's a machloket only according to Rabbi Yehuda. But according to Rabbi Meir, there is no machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Okay. Question 12. In what does Rabbi Meir agree with Beit Shammai as Rabbi Yehuda depicted their stance? And in what does he agree with Beit Hillel as Rabbi Yehuda depicted their stance? So here's Rabbi Meir, right? He says, take away every other one, and mifakpek is irrelevant. So in what does he agree with the Beit Shammai of Rabbi Yehuda? He agrees that you need to take away every other one. And in what does he agree with Beit Hillel? He agrees that you only need to do one thing.
Yeah.
So let's now talk about the level of now principles. Therefore, what are the principles involved? So Rabbi Meir, what do you think his principles are here? Is it a problem of taseh velo menasui? Or is it a problem of gzerat tikra?
It's the gzerah.
Probably gzerat tikra. Right? Because he says mipakpek doesn't help at all. Gzerat tikra. And this would seem to militate against what Brooks said 2 minutes ago. Seems to. So Rabbi Meir seems to say that there is a gzeirat tikra, we have to deal with it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says whether it's a gzeirat tikra or not, it might be a machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And halachas like Beit Hillel, which means Rabbi Yehuda would be saying there's no gzeirat tikra. Rabbi Meir says there is a gzeirat tikra, which is exactly what the previous Mishnah says.
Right.
Concerning between 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. At the previous Mishnah of Machloket between 3 and 4, this is according to Shmuel's way of learning, the Gzera Tikra or not. And that's what our Mishnah is also saying. Rabbi Yehuda says, according to Beit Hillel, there's no Gzera Tikra, there's only Taseh Velo Menasui, because you made it as a roof, therefore, do Mipakpek or take one. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, what do you mean? It's a Gzera Tikra, you can only do taking every other one out, so it won't be a tikra anymore. So it does seem now that everything fits, and it fits too well. Because now this seventh Mishnah, what does it add to the sixth Mishnah? Let me think. Any other questions we have here that are important? How does the...
When they say to take out every other one,
yeah.
Could that be the lifting up that they're talking about is the lifting up the every other one instead of lifting up the ones that are still there?
I don't think so. Because you have mitpat pek or take each one out. So it doesn't seem mitpat pek isn't related to the related, other every yeah. other one thing.
Plus the yeah. Rabbi Meir statement is hard to read that way.
Hard to read it that way.
Mm-hmm. It seems.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Two separate.
Okay, so that... is a good superficial reading of the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. And shall we begin? Let me go. Give me a minute to think. If we should be look at the Mara. Yeah. Let's read the Rambam. Yeah, we're going to finish. We're going to do it quickly. Let's read the Rambam. I'll just show you the Rambam is on the back page. And the Rambam... You know what? We won't read it. There's not enough time. We'll just say the Rambam says that our Mishnah is talking about Nesarim that are less than four, as we said. And then we'll just read one small piece of the Gemara, and I think we'll actually have done this whole Mishnah tonight. So back to the first page, the second paragraph of Gemara, beginning with my Kamashmalan, is exactly the issue that David brought up. What is our Mishnah teaching us? It's just repeating what the previous Mishnah said. My Kamashmalan, what does it let us hear? What is it teaching us? De Rabbi Meir it le gzerat tikra. Rabbi Yehuda let le gzerat tikra. That Rabbi Meir has a gzerat tikra and Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have a gzerat tikra. Ha, behold, afliguba, they argued over it. Chadezimna, once already. Literally one time. Chadezimna, chadzman, one time. Ditnan, as we learned in the Mishnah, Misakachin Bitsarim, Div Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir Oser. And of course, the previous Mishnah, we already heard them arguing over the question, is there a Gzerat Tikra or not a Gzerat Tikra, in this case of between 3 and 4. So the answer the Gemara gives is the following, with this we'll end. By the way, it's not the best answer in the world, but... Seifa, Rabbi Yehuda hi deka amar leila Rabbi Meir. The end, in other words, looking at our two Mishnayot, 6 and 7, 7 is called the end. Seifa, Rabbi Yehuda hi deka amar leila Rabbi Meir. The end is Rabbi Yehuda saying to him, to Rabbi Meir. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda is trying to get back and make a point to Rabbi Meir. What's the point? The point is as follows. Amai ka'asrat bin sarim mishun zeirat tikra. Why did you forbid nisarim on the basis of zeirat tikra? Ha, savra levet shamai hu de'it lehu ve'tele lo gazri. Behold, it is held by Beit Shammai that they have it, and Beit Hillel doesn't go there. In other words, look, me and you, Rabbi Yehuda and me, we had a machlok, the Gzeirat Tikra there isn't in a case of between 3 and 4. So here comes this Mishnah 7, and it's Rabbi Yehuda showing Rabbi Meir, look, it's a machlok at Hillel and Shammai, and Hillel's who we always hold by, and Hillel doesn't have a Gzeirat Tikra because he says you can be mekpak pek, and that's enough. So if there's no Gzerat Tikra, when you already built it as a Tikra, all the more so, should there not be Gzerat Tikra in the previous Mishnah. So why is this Mishnah here? For Rabbi Yehuda to prove his point. How does Rabbi Meir answer? So that's the last few words of the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Meir, says Rabbi Meir, lo nechlaku bet shamayu betil bedavar zeh. Rabbi Meir answers, They didn't argue Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel over this issue. You can't prove to me that I'm wrong because I hold like Beit Shammai. I don't hold. There was an argument with Beit Shammai. I have a different tradition. In my tradition, they didn't argue over it. They both agreed that there is a Gzerat Tikra. That's the end of the seventh Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says that you have to take away one and you can't be Mekpakpeh. He's saying that Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, doesn't matter. There's a Gzerat Tikra. Therefore, you have to remove every other one. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay. You're right.
And this last thing is well, it reminds us, as one of the first things you taught us when we started studying Mishnah was that they used to just all be squished together.
Right.
So when they get torn apart, it's hard to see that statement.
Right.
But
right.
When you put them back, if you were to put them back together, it would flow more consistently with that argument.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yep.
There
you go. Okay.
Thank you.
Good night. Okay.